Hello, guys. This is Clint Locklear with Trapping Radio. I'm up at the New York convention, and I've got a guest that we're going to be talking to tonight. So before we get into that, I want to thank our sponsors. We got some of the best ones in the industry. We've got F&T at Alpena, Michigan. They have everything you need for trapping, hunting with hounds, and predator calling. Funky Trap Tags and Supplies out of Iowa. Alan definitely takes care of all of his customers. We got Dunlap Lures, which is a good friend of mine, Jeff Dunlap, Hellfire, Soul Taker, stuff like that. He makes really good products. We have Oki Cable and Trap out of Oklahoma. He's got a full supply rig. He's really good to his customers. Just another really good guy. And Wildlife Control Supplies, if you're in the ADC business, they have everything that you would want. Okay, Bill, who are you? Introduce yourself. We need to know who you are, where you're from, what's your favorite superhero, you got any fetishes? We got to figure all this stuff out, man.
My name's Bill Caston. I'm from Halstead, Pennsylvania. I've trapped for the last 50 years. Russ Carman's my neighbor. He taught me about everything I know. If there was one person I was going to say it'd be any kind of a superhero, he'd be it.
So, has he lived next to you this whole time?
No, I was born in Virginia, in Winchester, and then my family moved to Pennsylvania, and...
I thought you had a little Southern in you.
Well, damn little. I was only there for a couple of years, and I went to kindergarten in Montrose, Pennsylvania, and went through high school there and everything else, and... Got out of high school in 69, went to Woodstock with the rest of the hippies, and that's about it as far as my... And then I started working for the Pennsylvania Game Commission, and I was there for 35 years on the Food and Cover Corps. Our whole job was to produce food and cover.
So for that's like what wildlife?
Yeah, for wildlife.
Like CPR land?
Yeah, the Pennsylvania Game Commission, I'm pretty proud of this. They have 1.4 million acres of land that was all bought and paid for through the sale of hunting licenses. Mm. Now think about that. That's a lot of ground.
Mm-hmm.
And it's open to the public for hunting and trapping and whatever.
That's pretty cool.
I had the privilege of... working there for 35 years.
So, when did you start trapping?
When I was about 12.
And how did you get into that?
Catching muskrats with the rest of the local kids.
See, all this like a gang of marauders going around catching stuff?
Well, we had to get our muskrats. There was nothing neater than seeing that muskrat's tail on top of the water when you're going around checking your traps. When I was a kid.
So, 69, so that would have been in the
50s? Oh, gosh, yeah.
See, I hate to tell you this, but I was
60s,
born in 69,
in the early
brother.
60s.
You're making me feel young.
Oh, heck. Making me feel old.
Nah, you're not old.
I'm 68 now, and I've got lung cancer. And if there's anything I could relate to younger people, is don't smoke. Don't start, don't vape, and don't do drugs.
Don't do drugs.
No dope. Dope's for dopes.
So you and Joe Rogan will not get along then?
Me and who?
Joe Rogan?
Don't even know who he is.
Okay. He's a big marijuana advocate.
Oh, well, yeah, we wouldn't get along. Well, you know, marijuana... may not be as bad a drug as drinking alcohol, but neither one of them are any good for you, so why start it? Why do it?
That's probably true, yeah. Have they, with your condition, have they talked to you about doing marijuana?
For food or pain or anything?
No.
But somebody was telling me today that they got this new cannabis oil that you put on under your tongue.
Mm-hmm.
And it's miraculous what it does for them, for their arthritis and everything.
Mm-hmm. It's good. I take it.
But I don't. I never did. You do?
Yeah, I've never had marijuana.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not saying I wouldn't.
You never smoked a weed, yeah?
No, I've never smoked
anything.
You're not
anything. Like Bill Clinton?
No, I've never.
You didn't inhale, you know?
Didn't even try to inhale. No. But so when you were a kid...
My biggest heroes were guys that could catch fox. Gosh, it took me years and years before I could catch a fox. And finally, I'd caught one or two or three. And finally, Russ told me about this step-down dirt hole set. And it was just like a light switch. I mean, O.L. Butcher used to say, if you can get a fox to step on a dime, you got it made. And Carmen showed me how to do that with a trench set, a dirt hole set, where the biggest spot, flat spot in the bottom of that set for him to put his foot is right on your trap pan.
That sounds a lot like the Leggett set. Is that kind of similar?
Yeah. Similar to it, but not quite the same.
That'll work.
Yeah, any of those sets will work.
So where was it in your life when you met Russ?
Oh, gosh. Snowmobiling when I was in high school. I went to a fur buyer's down the road. His name was Judd Tiffany. He lived just outside of Montrose. And Judd taught me that you can't sell black coon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they had to be white and or cream-colored like a coon skin is. But he had all these fox hanging upstairs in rows in this old house, in one of the rooms, all these rows of fox. And I said, Judd, man, you must have really had a lot of fox trappers come in here. He said, nope, just one. And I asked him who it was, and he said, Russ Carmen. And I said, I got to meet him.
So how did that go when you first introduced you? Because Russ is kind of a quiet guy.
Yeah, well, we used to snowmobile and screw around. He just lived over the hill from me. So I knew where he was. The next thing I had to find out was... And he come walking into Judd's one night, not to change the subject or anything. Him and the guy he was trapping with, Doug Sturrock. And Russ come in there, and they both had a pretty tall pack basket, and it was, both of them were full of rats. I mean, plumb full, with mink on top. They had probably 8 mink and 40 or 50 rats that they'd caught that day. Now, I'll tell you, that kind of numbers kind of impressed this young kid.
Mm-hmm. That's impressive to me today.
Yeah. Well, you couldn't do it today. There ain't the rats, but...
So how young was Russ when you met him? Was this before he was famous, or?
Well, he's 12 years older than I am. Something like that, 10
okay,
or 12 years
okay.
older.
So was he writing books and all that at this point, or was he just building his skill level up?
Judd Tiffany had just started him in the lure business by getting him going, getting him excited about it. And then Russ, I still remember a case of muskrat lure sitting in Judd Tiffany's on the table there where he bought fur, and he was selling the rat lure, you know, and it was his Hudson Seal. He's still selling it today. Great stuff. Yep. They just go out, and him and Judd trapped together one year, and they went out on Williams Pond where there was a lot of rat houses. And they just go up to a rat house with a boat and make a little spot on the side of the house and normally just look and see where the rats are climbing up. And they'd set a trap down, put a little of that Hudson Seal over it, and the next day every one of them would be full of rats. You know,
wow.
But that's back when there was rats. Mm-hmm. We don't have them today like
well,
that.
It was interesting. About 4 years ago, I went up with Dunlap.
Mm-hmm.
And our muskrats at home don't make feed beds like you have.
Yeah, yeah.
So they're just in the bank.
Yeah.
You know, you may see a little stuff floating here and there. And
just
I was
look for a mud trail going out of the bank. Yeah.
You know, I was excited like a kid because that's all I've read and seen is people setting them things. And we went out there and set a bunch and had a good time. We caught.
Oh
a bunch
yeah,
of
it's fun. Yeah, yeah.
Because it was like kid trapping with two adults out there kid trapping.
And since then, I've trapped Montezuma. I trapped with Paul Dobbins for a couple of about a week down in North Carolina, Trapped with Winston Marshall down in Virginia for 2 weeks one time. I've been around the block.
How come you never went with me?
Oh, hell. Clint, I only got so much time.
Okay. That'll work. So yeah. You've been, besides the trapping, you've been a fixture at these shows.
Well,
ever since I've been here, coming to them.
I retired when I was 54. And maybe 2 years before that, I started going to a lot of shows, and it piqued my interest to start selling this stuff. So I've been at it for maybe 20 years. You know, been retired for 14. So I've been living the dream.
Mm-hmm.
It's what I like to do. I like to talk to people, and I like to sell trapping supplies. And I've not made any. If somebody wants to get in this business to make a fortune, they're looking at the wrong enterprise.
What Newt says, it's kind of like getting in the commercial fishing business. You better start with a lot, so you end up with a little.
Yeah. Yeah. I've bought used traps all over the country. I've been to conventions as far away as Kansas and Minnesota. As far south as North Carolina, as far north as Maine. I mean, you know, I go where I can. And Tennessee and Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
Tennessee, not Kentucky.
You've never been to Kentucky to...
I've been through Kentucky on my way to Evansville, Indiana to a show. But, yeah, I was on the board of directors of the Fur Takers of America for several years. Yeah, I got these guys to... Thinking about it, I don't know whether nobody thought about it before, but with an organization like that, the more memberships you have, the more votes you have.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like an election. The more people you can get to vote for you or vote the way you want something to go, the more power you have to get something accomplished.
Mm-hmm.
So I got every district in Pennsylvania to become an affiliate. And there was 13 of them or something like that, or 11 or 12.
So you're like a little Trump.
I'm a little Trumper. I'll tell you, I'd vote for Trump over any of these Democrats we got today.
I think everybody...
I don't mind saying that on the air neither.
I get tickled at Newt wearing his all Trump gear today.
Oh, God. Well, he gets a little carried away.
Yeah.
He had some of that Obama stuff that really wasn't politically correct. Yeah. But I think the economy's doing good. People have money. They're spending money.
Mm-hmm.
And you know the fur market ain't no good. So where are they getting their money? It's coming out of their pocket because they love to trap.
Well, you know, it's changed in about the last... I've noticed in about the last 10 years or so, where it went from when we were younger, it was a lot more about the money, you know, because we could make money. And then now it's turned in more of a sport, a more of a hobby, like deer hunting, than it used to be.
Yeah. I have a lot of customers that just want to catch that one coyote.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them will bring it to me to skin it because they don't know the first thing about it. And I've skinned probably, I don't know, 15 or 20 a year for people. And I'll take it, you know, if it's somebody's first coyote, it's like, you know, your first deer. And I'll take that coyote, skin it, flesh it, stretch it, ship it off to Moyles, get it tanned, sell it back to them for $100. No, but...
You don't make them eat the liver like a deer
No. Nothing grows. And they'll stand there and watch me skin it. I mean, they got the time to stand there and watch me skin it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I don't get it.
So do you have a shop at your place,
yeah,
too?
Oh,
you do. Okay.
I have had a small store for the last several years. I don't know how much longer I can keep it open now because of my health. But I'll just keep going along as I can.
Mm-hmm.
You know. Yep. Yeah, the trappers have been good to me, and I hope I've returned to favor a little bit.
Well, I hear, you know, on our side of the table, you always hear rumors, but I've never heard anything negative about you.
Yeah,
and that's just the honest truth. You know, so, I mean, that says a lot.
Well, you want me to just tell you they don't know me very well? Or
well, what? It could be, but, well, I mean, people respect you. I mean, that means a lot.
Well, that's a good thing, yeah. If you treat people like you want to be treated...
That's the key.
It's the whole thing.
Right.
If you're a jerk to somebody, that's what you can expect.
That's kind of what you deserved back, too.
Yeah. And I always tried to be fair. Price-wise, I've never tried to... there's a lot of bickering and backbiting and stuff at these things, especially these trapping conventions, where one guy will sell... Like, let's just take Carmen's Lure, for example. It's supposed to sell for $6. You know, that's the normal retail price in the catalog and all that. I'll try to sell it for $5.50. But there was a guy around a while ago, he's no longer in business, by the way. I ain't going to mention no names. He's gone, and he used to sell it for, like, if it was $5.50, he'd sell it for $4. You know, he's still making money, but he's not making money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's crazy.
Yeah, he'd have to sell thousands of bottles.
Yeah, and he wasn't. He was a small-time dealer.
Yeah, well, they're
and so am I
see that a lot.
As far as that goes.
On traps, I mean.
Yeah, traps are hard. Traps are tough. That's why I sell mainly used traps. You don't see me bring a box of new traps to a show anymore. You can't make money on them. Mm-hmm. If I can't make money, what am I going to haul them for? Somebody else's convenience?
Mm-hmm.
No, I don't think so. You know, it's just like trapping. If you go to a place where there ain't no coyotes and you're trying to catch coyotes, you're not going to catch any.
Mm-hmm.
If you go to a place with a truckload of traps and Duke pulls in next to you and undercuts your price that you can get, and not that Duke's a bad trap, they're all good traps, but if he's selling 1.5s for to the public for $35 and the normal retail price is $46, how are you going to make any money?
Well, I just always,
you can't sell what you got.
The guys that cut the price, I've always been amazed at that, because it's kind of like they get personal with each other.
It's like cutting your own throat.
And they're trying to figure out who can run out of business first, quicker than the other guy.
Yeah.
You know, it just doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Yeah.
Well, that's the business end of it. But the people you meet, and I used to do 4 or 5 shows in New York every year.
Hmm.
Just New York. Messina, Little Valley. Camp Zerbe, this one, 1 or 2 down below. It's crazy.
I'm amazed at how many people the shows allow us to meet.
Oh,
and just interesting people. And
you know, it's funny. I don't know if you have this happen to you very much, but it happens to me all the time. Somebody come up, Bill, how you doing, man? Good to see you. And I'm thinking, who in the heck is this? I can't remember everybody's names.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even try to. I'll just shake their hand and say, yeah, good to see you, man. You know?
Well, most of the time, well, see, if you looked at my cell phone, if I were to take someone's new name down, I put their name, their state, and what I find interesting about them. You know, that's the only way I can keep up with everything. So, normally when I meet...
I don't even try not names.
Yeah, I try, but it's hard. I'm like, as soon as they start talking, they mention what they're doing, then it starts clicking.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
Yeah. What they're trapping or whatever, yeah.
So, is Pennsylvania pretty much where you spent most of your time trapping?
I live there. Yeah, I've done a lot of beaver trapping, a lot of coyote trapping. Trapped coyotes for best management practices and foxes, testing different traps. And hands down, the best trap we tested for coyotes, and I'm going to say this on Clint's radio show, and he's probably not going to like it too much, is MB550. Hands down the best trap. And I'll tell you why. Because you go out there trapping and you get somebody's dog, you only got to do it once and you ain't going to be welcome back.
I'm not upset with you saying that.
I love that trap. That is, it doesn't damage the feet like some other traps. It's just a good trap. I know you like big traps, or did.
Yeah, I mean, my cow trap and cat traps, except for Texas and weird places like that, is number 3, 6.5 inch.
Yeah.
Double laminated.
Yeah.
Canadian modified.
Yeah. Well, when we were testing traps, of course, a lot of the stuff wasn't fair in the sense that they gave us, just as an example, they gave us Montana number 3s 1 year to test, and they had a 26 inch chain on them. Well, how are you going to compare that to Victor 175 that's got a 5-inch chain or 6-inch chain?
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to compare that unless you're comparing apples to apples. You got to use a short chain on everything or a long chain on everything.
Exactly. Yeah. I was in part of the BMP process too, and we got raccoons.
Yeah.
And they were Sleepy Creek number 11s.
Yeah.
And there's probably 10 of us that were doing this thing, and we maxed out those the first 4 or 5 days of whatever the number was. We took the raccoons in, and the other trap was it was either a Victor or a Sleepy Creek number 1 coil spring double jawed that you could open it up just by looking at it. It was so weak.
Oh.
And they were like going, y'all need to catch coons in these other ones. We're like, we're catching coons in them every night. You can't hold a coon in it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't know what you're going to test. And I think out of 10 people, there was like 4 coon that was actually held.
Oh, my.
Because you had to use their staking system. And they all had to be the same. And they just tried to power that trap down to the point where I think a muskrat could pull out of it. Yeah. And they're trying to hold raccoons with it.
Well, the BMP tests that we did were all stock traps. Just like you'd buy them out of the store. And we had to prep them. We had to boil and wax them and get them, so they'd take the dye and this and that. And then we had to put several tags on them because they wanted their tags on them. And we had to mess with each one to get it to fire the way we wanted it to fire.
Mm-hmm.
And
we weren't allowed to do anything. We couldn't file. We couldn't do anything. We couldn't.
Well, I don't know if Russ filed on it because he's the one that prepped all the traps. But I think he did adjust the pan tension.
Mm.
So it was like 2.5 pounds or something like that for fox and coyote. And we got to keep all the coons, foxes. If we were studying coyotes, we got to keep everything else we caught. Mm-hmm. So we wanted all the other stuff.
Right, absolutely.
As well as the coyotes. And we caught quite a few.
I mean, I like the bigger traps. But, I mean, when I started, I was an O'Gormanite.
Yeah.
Number 3 Bridger.
Well, you went to school with Greg, didn't you?
A couple times. Yeah. So that was my mindset. But I know so many people that use the MB, and it's a good trap. I mean, there's no doubt about that whatsoever.
I like that trap.
If they just make one that was 6.5 inches, I'd buy it.
Well, the MB 650 is a good coyote trap, but it's a hell of a piece of steel. You get a dog in that thing, it's going to get hurt. And that reminds me of a story. You got time for a story?
Sure.
This old fella I know, he's quite an old man now. He's about 90, I think. He took a few of them. He had a nuisance business, and he set one just a little closer than he should have to this old folks' home. Well, this old boy's out there walking his dog one morning. His dog got caught in a darn MB 650. So the old boy, he went over there and he he gets his feet on each spring, you know, pushing down on him, and he got his thumbs in there trying to pull him jaws apart, and he ended up with both thumbs in the trap.
With the dog or without the dog?
Without the dog. The dog got out, but he got caught. So my old buddy that set the darn thing, he drove up to it, and there was all kinds of ambulances and police and fire company was there, you know, trying to get this old man out of this trap.
Well, my favorite trap.
So Forrest ended up getting fined for setting in a safety zone, I think.
Well, you got to be careful. My favorite trap of all time is the MJ600. And I still use them sometimes, but they're so expensive now, I'm scared to use them like I used to use them.
I just saw one of the early ones with painted lettering on it for, gosh, I forget how much, 50, 60 bucks on eBay. And I don't sell a lot on eBay. I'd rather sell person to person, but I've just got so many traps that it's hard to sell them to individuals when there isn't that many individuals around, you know? And eBay gives you a shot at a lot of wider market.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, the last MJ600s I bought was down at the Georgia convention, and they only had two.
Yeah.
And I don't know what they started with, 20. And then I looked over and I saw the person bidding against me with Rusty Johnson. And I like Rusty.
Yeah.
But I just kept where he couldn't see who was bidding against him. And I wouldn't have cared if I paid $150 a piece. And it frustrated him to no end.
You like that trap, huh?
I do.
Does Keith still sell them?
I think, but they're just so expensive now. I mean, they're higher than Jake traps.
I believe that's all Zagger uses, Mark.
Is the Jake traps, yeah.
Jake traps, mm-hmm. Yeah, but he used to use Sterlings a lot.
Yeah, they're just, to me, nothing is ever bedded like that trap.
Really? I mean,
that's the...
Odin Carr would agree with you.
Would he?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, they're just, it's amazing trap, so... let me ask you a few questions.
All right.
Pertaining trapping.
Yeah, we got to wrap this up pretty quick.
Okay. When you were dealing in the winter, because when people ask me questions about trapping in the winter, I don't trap in the winter. I keep going south till I run into a different country.
Uh-huh. So, yeah.
How were you dealing with the snow and ice in Pennsylvania when you were boxing coyote
trapping? That's about the time you'd pull your traps. And if you wanted to catch them, there are ways you can do it. You got to have a good antifreeze. All right. There's so many different mixtures. Peat moss, I've used a ton of peat moss trying to catch foxes in the winter. Peat moss works. Peat moss mixed with buckwheat hulls works.
I use that a lot.
Peat moss mixed with dirt, 50-50, and a little antifreeze in there packs a little better and works. But it's got to be dry dirt.
You talking about using propylene glycol? Is that what you're using?
No,
or glycerin?
No, neither. I sell a powdered antifreeze that I don't like to divulge what it is, but...
Super secret stuff, huh?
Oh, no, it's not no super secret, but if I tell everybody, they'll just go to the damn feed store and buy a bag of it. You know, it's nothing.
So it's like a salt base of some kind.
Well, I believe it's the same stuff Leggett's used to sell.
Okay, I'll follow you.
It's a powder, but it's not salt and it's not calcium, and that's about all I got to say.
Yeah,
about
we won't
that.
Go any further. Okay, I follow you. So you never, but like your sets per se, like if you did have snow, would you still do the step down?
Oh yeah.
And you just let it
you
fill
betcha.
In?
No, just brush it off. If it fills in, just brush it off and keep going, you know.
Okay.
Let her set.
And
the longer you can stay away from a coyote set, the better off you are.
Well, a lot of people that listen to this podcast are a lot younger than we are.
Yeah.
So,
by that, I don't mean don't check it. I mean just don't go near it.
Right.
Go close enough to see their inner jaw sticking up out of the ground.
Mm-hmm.
But that's it.
So I'm assuming that you're pretty much a Russ Carmen lure guy.
Oh, yeah.
So, a lot of younger guys won't know who he is.
I've used Russ's lure since the early 70s, you know, totally. Beaver lure, rat lure, his coon lure, my goodness, that he's got a coon lure number one that is sickening. It's so sweet. You get that stuff on your fingers and you're smelling it for a week. I mean, how can something like that not last at a set?
Right.
You know what I mean? And it's just amazing how that pulls coon.
Well, my favorite stuff about, I've bought hundreds and hundreds of old trapping magazines.
Yep.
My favorite was, of all of those magazines, were him and Craig and Johnny Thorpe back at each other. That was the best entertainment in the world to find those.
Yeah. Yeah. Russ would be there with mink dripping off him all over the place. He'd have 20 or 30 mink hanging off his shoulders and then his arms. Kind of like the old Curtis G. Grigg stuff, you know. Look what I did.
That's pretty amazing.
But boy, he did it. That's the thing. You know, he had an old Chevy or Dodge. I think it was a Dodge pickup. I remember the picture. I never saw the event. But my God, he had like 25, 30 Fox laying there. Nobody did that stuff back then. You know, the best fox trapper in Susquehanna County, where we live, was a guy named Cecil Rose. And he'd tell you something just to throw you off. He would. That's the way they were. I've never been there. I try to teach people how to trap, not how not to. I want them to catch them stinking coyotes, you know.
Well, that's the difference of back then and now, I believe.
Boy, howdy. And Russ taught himself, basically, how to catch foxes and how to catch a lot of foxes. He trapped bounty right through fall trapping, winter trapping. My guy, he'd catch 8 or 10 fox in the middle of December when you got 6-8 inches of snow on the ground, you know. He was pretty damn good at it, too.
That's impressive. It really is. So any other last words of wisdom to young trappers that you can think of, brother?
Words of wisdom.
Besides, don't smoke and don't do drugs?
Don't smoke, don't do drugs. Mind your mother and father. No. Now I'm sounding like, what's his name there? Hoplong Cassidy or something. Just get out there and enjoy it, guys.
That's the main thing, and not stress over it.
Don't think that there's magic in a bottle, because there ain't.
Except for mine.
Well, except for Clint's and Russ's. I had to say that. But, you know, there's hundreds of the lure business, just like any other business. There's been great ones, and there's been some not so great ones. So buy from the great ones. Larry Combs, an old man that goes with me to shows, he makes lure. He's not flashy. He doesn't advertise big, but I'll tell you what, catches fur.
I guarantee you. See, that's the shame to people like him.
And when he's gone,
if he marketed like Russ Carman, he would be like Russ Carman.
Yeah.
I mean, he
yeah.
is an absolute animal when it comes to trapping. But when you see him at the table, he's quiet. He doesn't say anything.
Yep.
And I mean, there's a lot of those guys out there. They're just amazing.
It's drummed into them not to say anything, because when he's trapping, he doesn't want nobody to know where he's trapping or what he's doing. I trapped with him up in the Adirondacks for a week or two one year, and he'd say, "Bill, you're getting out of the truck. Don't leave any tracks."
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what, when I went with Red coon trapping, that's what he does. He jumps from grass pile to grass pile like a cat. And he always parks in the middle of the road.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm like, dude, I'm like, I weigh 340 pounds. I can't do that.
Can't jump, man. Yeah. All right, sir. Well, it's been a pleasure.
All right. I appreciate you talking with us, man. I really do.
Yep.
Thanks a lot.
You got it.